I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and good evening to everybody. We're going to be convening the meeting under House Rule 10.01, which is posted online, and I want to thank everybody for being somewhat flexible today. We had to adjust the start time as a result of the session being a little bit longer than we anticipated. The clerk will take the roll as members arrive, and she just announced or let us know that we do have a quorum. We do have three bills on the agenda today, and the first one is House File 1 with Representative Murphy being the chief author, but there are three sections in the bill. One section deals with the capital investment initiatives, and then there's a provision dealing with tax law, and finally the supplemental appropriations bill. Once we're done with that one, if you'll notice, I introduced a supplemental appropriations bill today that was referred to committee that is identical to the article that's in House File 1, but we'll be reporting that one out as a separate vehicle. And then we have the Eklund bill before us. And just for your notes, they did pass in identical form the Eklund bill. So we'll be taking up, the Senate passed and it was referred to Ways and Means, so we'll be taking up the Senate file as our third bill, but it's identical to the House file. So with that, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I can move the bill that House File 1 recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 1 is the economic stimulus and recovery during COVID-19 bonding bill that we are proposing to the Ways and Means Committee one more time. We enjoy coming to your committee so much that we've made a few changes and additions. Andy Lee and Deborah Dyson, our nonpartisan staff, are here and they can give a brief overlook of the whole bill.
And the reason I missed when I recognized you before, Vice Chair Olson, you were on the committee so many years, and then you've been before the committee with this bill so many times that you feel like it feels like you're part of the group, which you are. So at any rate, however you want to proceed, you want them to do a quick walkthrough? Is that the approach you want to use, Representative Murphy?
I would, Mr. Chair, mainly because I just got a copy of the bill this morning, and then we went into session after I had received the copy. I went to the Natural Resources Research Institute, and they copied it for me. I brought them paper, and they copied it for me. And so I'm just not real comfortable with every part of the bill. And so I asked them to help me out.
Okay, who would you like to go first, Ms. Dyson or Mr. Lee?
I don't know which one has decided to do that. Ms. Nash,
yeah, the one
Jenny
you're talking
Nash
about
is our chief organizer, and she's been talking with them throughout the day, and I haven't.
Okay. Ms. Dyson, do you want to go first, or do you want to have Andy Lee go first?
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that Mr. Lee go through the appropriations articles. The capital investment provisions, there are five articles that relate to that, so I'd recommend we go in order and have Mr. Lee go first.
Okay. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, so I'll be walking through just doing the section totals for the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet is just a kind of condensed listing of all the appropriations in Articles 1 through 5. And the spreadsheet I'll be going through, I think just got popped up on the screen there. So I'll just be going through section totals. The first one on line 11 on the first page is the GO total for the University of Minnesota at $75.381 million. And I should just highlight the note that's on line 10. In the policy article, there's a provision that allows the University of Minnesota to refinance bonds that were authorized for biosciences back in 2010. And the university estimates that because of this refinancing and with the existing stream of revenue from the state to pay the debt service, they could issue an additional about $28 million in appropriation bonds. This note here, it says $21 million. That was from an estimate back in April. They think they could get a little bit more depending on market conditions. So then moving to the next section, Minnesota State, there's the total authorization is $90,888,000, and that's split between user financing, which is highlighted in blue on the spreadsheet and says GOUF, and that's in those projects, two-thirds are from Minnesota State system, one-third is from the Minnesota State system and two-thirds is from the state, and the GO portion for just HEPR on line 14 is all state-financed debt. Moving on to the Department of Education, $3.951 million. Then under State Academies, $8.98 million. For the Perpich Center for the Arts on line 40, $750,000. And then moving to the next page for Department of Natural Resources, at the bottom of page 2, line 81, is $104,420,000 in GO bonds for DNR. Then on page 3, line 93, $27.146 million for the Pollution Control Agency. And then for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser, on line 102, $24 million for Bowser, and that's split between geobonding at $16 million and $8 million in general fund spending. Next, the Department of Health and Agriculture for their lab building, $20.779 million, and that $779 million is general fund spending for equipment. Next, for the zoo, $13 million. That's on line 115. Moving on to page 4, under the Department of Administration, $4.77 million for admin. Then for the Amateur Sports Commission, $6.087 million. For Military Affairs, $24.545 million. For the Department of Public Health.
Here's my recommendation. Could you give Jody and I just some time?
Department of Public Safety, $50.355 million. And then for the Department of Transportation, which is on pages 5 and 6, the total there is on line 210, and that is $327,591,000. But on that same page for the Metropolitan Council, $88.4 million. For the Department of Human Services on page 7, $27.409 million. Then for Veterans Affairs, $6.75 million. Department of Corrections, $44.498 million. And then on page 8, is the list for the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and there's a lot of grants to political subdivisions on this page. And on the bottom of that page on line 312 is the total there is 161.791 million. Then the next page, page 9, again, a number of grants to political subdivisions for the Public Facilities Authority, and that total is 269.11 million. Then moving on to page 10 for housing finance, 16 million. For the Historical Society, 1.393 million. And then moving on to the next article for trunk highway bonding, there's a total of 300,000 in trunk highway bonds. And then the next page on the equity article, I believe that's article 3, is a total of 30 million in general fund spending for nonprofits and political subdivisions, and the grants are through the Department of Agriculture, Metropolitan Council, Department of Human Services, and Department of Employment and Economic Development. So there'll be a few places where you'll see both agencies in both the GEO article and this article. And there's one project that's split between both of them, and that's, you can see the general fund side is on line 415 for the Victoria Theater in St. Paul. Then at the bottom of page 11, this is a list of the appropriation bonds authorized in the next article, and that's for community electric vehicle infrastructure, Minnesota Public Television, the MPCA response to release cleanups, and housing infrastructure bonds on line 426. So then on the last page, this shows the totals of all the various funds. The total of all spending in the capital investment articles is on line 438 at 1.878 billion. And then there's a number of cancellations specific to trunk highway bonds and GO bonds. You can see the GO on line 441 and 442. Bringing the net GEO impact on line 444 at 1.369.8 billion. And then the next, rest of that page is a few technical notes. And I believe Mr. Marks will be getting into some of the overall bill costs with relating to offsets and the tax articles, but the net above base general fund impact of the bonding articles is 52.4 million in this biennium and 89.4 million in the tails. And that's all I have for the bonding appropriations articles.
Now, Mr. Lee, will you be talking about the funding, or will that be Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that will be Mr. Marks for the most part, unless there's questions specific to bonding.
Okay, very good. Ms. Dyson, I'm not sure how you folks divided things up, so. Ms. Dyson? Are you just available?
There we go. No, I was just trying to find my document here. Mr. Lee, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Mr. Lee already described Article 4 essentially, because that is the appropriation bonding article with money for the electric vehicle infrastructure appropriation bonds, the public television equipment appropriation bonds, the money for the PCA removal and remedial actions, and then the housing infrastructure bonds. One of the differences, I won't go into things that are different from months ago. So anyway, that's Article 4. Article 5 is the miscellaneous policy provisions and then changes to past appropriations. And in this article, you have the authority for MMB to use negotiated sales, and it's established as permanent authority. There's a technical correction for the Duluth Regional Exchange Project in Section 2 that allows the bonds to remain available until 2027 to match the program. And then you have the next section a report from the Rural Finance Authority that would be quarterly on the estimates of when funding for the authority's bond-funded programs might be exhausted, to give the legislature more timely information. There is then the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facility Capital Grant Program that's established in statute. The bill does not contain any funding for the program, but it does set up the program in statute for future use. Then there are, in sections 5 through 10, changes to the Maximum Effort School Loan Program that recognizes that there are some loans that will never get repaid. And if you want more details on that, I would defer to the fiscal analyst, to Mr. Lee, about what money that savings that results in. The next section is a change to the accessibility grants for libraries, and it increases the maximum amount for library accessibility grants from $200,000, which was set in 2005, to $300,000. Sections 12 to 16 are the provisions that Mr. Lee referred to before relating to the University of Minnesota Clinical Research Facility financing and the authority to use an existing appropriation to pay the debts that's not needed for the bonds that were issued before to be used for paying debt service on university bonds for that facility. The next one is a new statutory program under the Amateur Sports Commission for construction and renovation of public skate parks. And there is money in the bill for that. The next section has, the next two sections relate to what people have referred to as the equity provisions. And they're extending the affirmative action plan and equal pay certificate of compliance requirements to a contract of any public entity that's using state geo bond proceeds for part or all of a capital project. And so it would include the political subdivisions. This requirement doesn't kick in until January 1st of 2022. The next section is beginning with changes to prior appropriations. And the first one relates to the Agua Ching Regional Treatment Center campus that is right now owned by Cass County and would allow it to transfer to the school district. There's a change to the Central Minnesota Regional Parks appropriation from 2014. There is the, and it extends its availability to 2024. Richfield 77th Street Underpass. This is again extending the availability of money, and same thing for the Northeast Regional Corrections Center, that that's people call it NERC. Then there's the Local Road Improvement Fund grants, and this is allowing a 2017 appropriation for Anoka County Interchange near Columbus to be used for another related part of the project and extends its availability. All of these projects that are extending availability is because there's a statute that otherwise cancels projects that have not proceeded within 4 years. And so this is allowing them to keep the money a little bit longer to complete projects or get going. The next one is the rail grade separation. This is the Sturgeon Lake Road project in Red Wing, and it extends the availability and adds right-of-way acquisition. This corresponds to an appropriation in the transportation section. And then next you have the Minneapolis Veterans Trust Home Trust Bridge. This was a 2017 appropriation, and there was money remaining in the appropriation when the bridge was completed. And this would allow half of the remaining funds, which I think is somewhere in the $3 million range, half of it to be used for asset preservation and half of it for campus safety and security upgrades at veterans homes statewide. And again, extends its availability. There are two provisions in the back in this part of the bill, Article 5, that relate to the Minnesota Museum of American Art and striking language related to state historic tax credits and that weren't going to work out, and then extends availability of the money. There's a section that modifies the Glen Sheen project so that it can access the $4 million that was appropriated, and then specifies that it's for the boiler and then for the garden walls. There's a couple of technical corrections to totals in the 2018 Act. There is a modification to the Hennepin County Railroad Crossing Safety Program from a 2018 project. Going down, you have the Pipestone County Dental Facility, and this is exempting this project from sustainable building guidelines. Towards the end of this article, you have Wabasha National Eagle Center and the riverfront revitalization, and it's modifying the 2018 appropriation to break it into discrete elements so that they can begin work on the parts for which they have full funding. And basically it's just breaking it up. There's another section, the debt service equalization aid. This relates to the maximum effort school loan program, as does the next section relating to Red Lake and Net Lake capital loans. There is a section that is uncoded for the Lake Vermilion Sudan Underground Mine State Park that designates part of the park as a secondary unit, which means that off-road vehicles are permitted. And then right before the repealer, there is a section on sustainable building guidelines for small projects, and it's just asking the Commissioners of Administration and Commerce to provide recommendations by February 15th of 2021 on revisions to the guidelines to simplify the approval and exemption processes and reduce compliance costs for small-scale projects. And so that will be a report to the chair and ranking minority members of the House and Senate committees with jurisdiction over capital investment. And then there's a repealer. Part of it relates to the maximum effort school loan program changes earlier in this article, and then it also repeals a requirement for a biennial report on jobs that were created or retained as a result of capital funding by the state. And that is Article 5.
Okay, thank you. We're going to operate with the showing of hands if anybody has any questions. Mr. Marks, would this be the time for you to chime in on some of the finance side?
Mr. Chair, that's up to you, or do you want to? Do you want to do that after the tax and the supplemental parts are covered too, or?
I just didn't know what the staff were, you know, when Representative Murphy deferred to the staff to present the bill, I wasn't sure if you were part of this or not. We can wait.
Okay.
So take the finance part up later then. We do have two amendments that have been filed by Representative Kresha. Before we take up the amendments, however, I do want to point something out that's very important, and that's that this bill has been very delicately negotiated between the House and the Senate. And the request, while the bill is in committee, is that we not add any amendments because of the negotiations that have transpired. But if there's future discussions that can, that would be worked out between the House and the Senate, and there would be agreement, then those issues could perhaps be taken up at a future date. But those were conversations that that I had with the people that were negotiating between the House and Senate, the agreement being no amendments. So with that, Representative Kresha, you have two. One, you indicated that you had decided, or I was told by our staff, the A20089 you had decided not to offer. There is the H1A2 amendment that's still before the committee. In light of what I just said, are you still interested in offering the amendment?
Are you recognizing me, Mr. Chair?
I thought
okay.
I recognized.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I just didn't hear. Yes, I understand the agreement. I understand how that works. I would still like to just offer the amendment and just have a quick discussion and leave it up to the committee on the voting.
Okay, if you want to move the amendment.
Yep, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the, and I'm sorry, I didn't get the whole coding of the amendment.
A2. It's the no-cost amendment is the one that I told that you were still interested in moving.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. So what I'm asking for, members, is we have, in our district here, we have the Lake Chaminade, which is suffering flooding, and there's another project, a couple other projects, and just trying to get some recognition for that project in the flood mitigation funding with the DNR. And so what I'm asking is to actually name that project in there so that they get some exposure and hopefully get into that flood mitigation grant. And with that, members, I would just ask for a yes vote.
Okay. Motion is before us. As I indicated, there is an agreement, no amendments. I'm not addressing that from the standpoint of the merits. It could conceivably, if there are future discussions, House, Senate, come up at a later date. I can't predict that one way or the other, but I would, as a result of those discussions, encourage a no vote, although I would like to represent or recognize Representative Murphy, being that it's your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Krishan, good to talk to you again. It's been a long time. I can't remember you ever talking to me about Lake Shamamu or what part it had after the hearing that was presented, what happened after the hearing that we had last spring before we were sent home for COVID. Over the summer or in the interim sometime, I received quite a bit of suggestions that we not consider that project. So what's happened? What's happened between the conflicting communities that changed this, that you're asking for this attention now?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krishan.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And long time no talk. You're right. I miss our ice cream socials. Representative Murphy, nothing has changed there. That we still have the Lake Improvement District that is trying to find a plan and to put something together. There still is some opposition, some groups. I apologize I didn't get a chance to talk to you before this committee. What I was hoping to do was to put this in here as a consideration so that they could be part of the flood mitigation grants and to work with the DNR to try to put a proposal going forward. That being said, I understand the fragile agreements that we have. I understand what I'm asking for. And so with that, I'm asking that the committee judiciously decide on this.
Mr. Chairman, I accept that. And I hope that we could have a longer talk on the phone, Representative Krishan, between now and tomorrow afternoon. I don't know if the committee should decide on it or if we have a list of things that might have to be addressed. And so we'll put this on the list. And so maybe it will be a decision of the four leaders before it goes to leadership first.
Okay, Representative Torkelson, you have your hand up. Is it on this amendment?
No, it's not, Mr. Chair. It's a separate issue.
Okay.
We can hold my question.
Yeah. Representative Krishan, I think the chair told you that there could be the possibility of future discussion. You sure you want to have a vote on it? I'm not sure how helpful it'll be for you if it's defeated. If you'd like to have the vote, that's fine. With that, any further discussion?
I would just say, Mr. Chair, I understand what's in front of me. I understand what I'm asking. I would respectfully ask for the vote, no matter which way it goes. And then, Representative Murphy, I can certainly reach out to you after that for further discussion.
Okay, any further discussion? Rick, Representative Hansen, your hand is up. Was it on this amendment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
I would recommend a no vote on the amendment. I think this particular project is very controversial. I think it would be an opportunity for the DNR to weigh in on this adding it into the flood mitigation in ways and means, I would recommend against.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the amendment H0001A2 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Defeated. Those were the, or that was the only amendment before the committee. To the next article, the tax article by Representative Marquardt. Any further discussion or questions on the bonding provision? And I did defer to future recognition of Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is appropriate time for this question, but we do have quite a bit of general fund spending in this bonding bill. General fund spending in a bonding bill is generally, in the past, to my experience anyway, been restricted to those situations where we need some general fund money to facilitate an existing project within the bill. Not everything can be funded with GO bonds. So sometimes we throw in some general fund money to make sure a project can move forward within the bonding structure. But most of the general fund spending in this bill are part of the equity article, seems to be unrelated to any kind of GO bond project. And I'm just curious about how this ended up in the bill and why we're doing so much general fund spending that's really not related directly to bonding projects within the bill.
Rep. Sam Murphy.
In the budget, the governor's budget that he introduced in February, he had an equity provision in there for $30 million. And he said that it should be, because we were the ones that were had criteria and so forth for projects, that that should be part of the bonding bill. And that's how it came to us, and that's what we did with it.
Follow-up, Mr.
Chair. We visited places, and they were part of the tours, and they were part of the hearings. I don't, you know, other than that, I don't know. But it was part of the governor's bonding bill.
Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that it does seem to be a little bit unusual as far as past practice goes. I'm not going to offer any amendments in regard to this general fund spending. Apparently, it's something the governor has decided is important to be in a bonding bill. But I just would point out that it's a rather unusual approach to funding these general fund type of projects in the bonding bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to mention one more thing that goes in there.
Murphy.
Maybe it had to do also with in previous bonding bills or previous bills, nonprofits are working with communities in many different ways in the state. And we found that out during our interviews with people that wanted bonding money. And sometimes nonprofits could not find a home or a way to request funds from a group of people that seem to be interested in listening to them. And our bonding committee did listen to these groups of people and what they were trying to do to help people within various communities. And putting them together certainly makes sense to me.
Okay, any further discussion on the bonding provision? Representative Torkelson, your hand is still up. Are you?
Okay, well, I do have another question related to a particular project, and that is the Grassy Point Railroad crossing in the Duluth Harbor.
You have. Go ahead.
I'm not sure who can answer my question, but the project, I'm familiar with the project, but it seems to have gone through some changes during negotiations, and I guess I would just like a little more detail on what the money is going to be used for, whether or not this is aimed towards eventually a full rehabilitation of that bridge, which my understanding would be a very, very expensive project. I'm not sure who on board might be able to answer my question, but I'll leave that up to you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, you're the author of the bill. Would you like to answer or defer to someone?
Ms. Olson is also an answer, but she hasn't been part of the discussions. There is more than enough. There is more than $30 million or $3 million that we have in the bonding bill proposed for the Grassy Point design and pre-design and finding out everything that's needed for the Grassy Point. Grassy Point is very, very in need of study and help and rehabilitation. The freight lines of Minnesota, and it seems that, you know, I'm not an expert on transportation, Representative Torkelson. You know that better than anybody in this room or in these rooms that we're in, not right now. But I've somehow or another, the bonding bill has become the transportation bill, or at least the corridors that the transportation people seem to want to take. And so, here we are, and this year, evidently, I did not know this at the beginning, but evidently, there's a big push in this state for improving freight rail lines. And if there's anything, any part of the state of Minnesota that needs a little improvement, it's Grassy Point. That some of the freight trains are down with, depending on what they're carrying, like to between two and 10 miles an hour. And so we have to make improvements that bring it up to date, since all the transit funding that's in this bill, more than ever before to transit funding, since all of that was raised, we have to spread the need around the state. And so Grassy Point is being recommended for $3 million.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, were you done?
I'm finished, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, this is probably my second 10 minutes or so looking at the entirety of this bill. I'm looking at the section between lines 406 and 415 relevant to the Department of Employment and Economic Development with a number of projects. I'm just wondering what the consideration and or the grid that these projects were scrutinized and underwent what scrutiny with those projects. If you could help me appreciate the process that you went through to vet those projects.
Representative Murphy.
I didn't get what lines, what where you are. Are you on the spreadsheet?
Representative Murphy, I'm on the spreadsheet, starting at line 407.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but Mr. Lee, if you could put that up, that might be helpful to everyone.
Four fifteen. These were part of the equity projects, and they came in the latter part of the negotiations from most of them. Let me think. I have a blank. They were bills that individuals had carried, and they were bills that were recommended in some by individuals in the minority in the Senate, and some by individuals in the majority of the House, and they were discussed and agreed upon in the discussions with Representative Sinjum and myself and Representative and later on Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I wasn't specifically going to who was sponsoring the bill in its individual nature. I'm more specifically interested in understanding, in typical fashion, a bonding project does require a certain match and or particulars, whether that be pre-design, engineering, or an emphasis or a commitment by the community in its jurisdiction over that project. So if you could just help me to understand that these projects met those particulars as they would be included in any bonding bill.
Representative Murphy.
I can, but I can't tell you the exact particulars in that most of these are not new projects. They're the phase two or phase three of the projects that have already been started, but not necessarily by the state with state money.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Murphy, then they weren't started by the state. So is it my understanding that they initially started out to be developed and or constructed without the state's assistance?
Sometimes they were. Many times they were, like, for instance, the International Institute of Minnesota, that has received funding in the past. And the work that they do is so important to the community that they are in and to the education of so many people that go through their training processes, that there is no question whether we should continue it or not. And the other programs were all programs that have had long, or most of them that I know of, had long service of providing services to the people of Minnesota and the people that were in the communities where that they are providing their services to.
Mr. Chair, just one final question.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, in most cases, one of the considerations of the Capital Investment Committee is to assure that if state dollars are dedicated towards a project, that the entity in itself has a, shall we say, a going concern from the standpoint of their profit loss statement or ongoing revenue that would support maintenance and or upkeep of the building itself. And did you receive assurance of that particular issue with regard to these projects, or as you've done with all the other projects, that they can support those on their own with the assistance of the state?
Yes, we did.
Representative Murphy.
And if you ask me these questions on Wednesday, I will have a better prepared answer.
Representative Murphy, you and I have known.
I'll have a couple examples for you.
Representative Murphy, I look forward to a great conversation with you on the floor on Wednesday.
Thank you. I will be better prepared.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to speak to just one of those. And by the way, Representative Kosnick is a strong supporter of the International Institute as well. Just mentioned that as a bipartisan project. When I initially, that was actually a standalone bill, and Representative Murphy heard that in her Capital Investment Committee as a standalone project. And the International Institute worked with the City of St. Paul. As you know, nonprofits need to work with a government entity to invite them to agree to be either whatever term you use, fiscal agent or local owner. And the City of St. Paul had agreed to that with the International Institute. So initially, as the bill was drafted, that was in fact geo bonding because it would be it would qualify for general obligation bonding with that kind of relationship with the City of St. Paul. That amount was more, I think it was $5.5 million of geo bonding. It was at some point, and I'm not certain if that was the governor's choice to move to a cash portion and lower to three. Cash is a little more flexible, and I don't know if that's why they lowered the amount, but I thought I would just give you background about the one project on that list that, in fact, was a standalone bill and at some point in the process, in fact, would have qualified for general obligation bonding.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other hands up relative to the sections dealing with the capital investment articles 1 through 6. So what we'll do is move to articles 7 and 8. They are the tax provisions, and Representative Marquardt, would you care to inform the committee about those articles?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And yes, Article 7 and Article 8 are the tax provisions of this economic stimulus and response to COVID-19 bill. And the main part, or I guess the agreement for starters here, was basically there would only be one cost item from the July tax bill that passed off the House floor. And that was the Section 179 like-kind fix. And so that is the only cost item. And then there are five other non-cost items as agreed between House and Senate leadership. So everyone, I think, is pretty familiar with the Section 179 full expensing. What that would do is provide a 100% deduction in the first year of a purchase of when equipment is put into operation. And that has been a provision that has been pushed and worked on by many legislators on both sides of the aisle, many business groups, strongly supported by farm groups. We've had a lot of testimony in tax committee on this provision. And we had also, besides the Section 179 full expensing always being a real priority in the last several years, this year another problem came up that we needed to fix. And it first came up during the mini session that we had in Winona, where we got word that there were small business owners and farmers who had traded in equipment in tax years 18 and 19. And under the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they had to recognize the trade-in value of things, where before they did not. But the federal government now required you traded something in and you got a value for that, that you had to count that as income. Well, on the federal side, it wasn't a problem because the federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did full Section 179 expensing, which meant the 100% deduction offset any gain. So there wasn't a problem there. But for those who had purchased and traded in equipment in Minnesota, the existing 20% basic offset of the Section 179 under Minnesota law would not offset the gain. And so farmers and small businesses saw this increase in taxes. So what this provision does in this tax bill is that for tax years 18 and 19, it provides full Section 179 expensing on those Section 1031 or like-kind exchanges. So now for tax years 18 and 19, small business owners and farmers would receive the very same treatment as they do under the federal government. And then moving forward with tax year 2020 and beyond, you would have full Section 179 expensing on everything. So it would apply just like the federal government. So this bill fixes that like-kind problem that we saw, and that this year in tax committee, this is our number one priority, was to fix that, but also try to get the Section 179 full expensing. So there's agreement with the House, the Senate, and the governor that we now can do that. Just like in July, this is kind of our second chance at it. We can get this done. And I know members in this committee on both sides of the aisle have talked to a lot of folks that want to see this Section 179 provision get taken care of. So hopefully we can do it this year. So the other, very quickly then, the other, that's Article 7. Then Article 8 are other tax items, no cost. And Section 1 says that a structure that has been demolished right now under current law, before that structure can be removed off the property, all taxes have to be paid. This would allow the county, if they think it's in the public's best interest, they could waive that requirement and therefore allow structures to be, that have been demolished or ruined, they could be removed before paying taxes. Section 2 deals with, and by the way, this is the only new provision that was not in the July tax bill. These other four were. Section 2 deals with short-term rental now making it Class 4B, which moves up the rate to from 1.0 to 1.25, but also takes it off the general property tax levy. So that deals with that short-term rental fix. Section 3 allows a spouse of a disabled veteran now qualifying for the property tax exemption, either as 100% disability or 70%, to move into one other home of the same or lesser value. And that was in the earlier bill. Section 4 deals with the old Central High School in Duluth. And this would allow for general obligation bonds of up to $31.5 million to deal with a school facility plan for that old Duluth Central High School. And then the fifth and final section would be the Minnesota High Schools, the Minnesota State High School League is exempt from having to pay sales taxes in its sectional and state tournaments. And what they've done, it's about $1 million a year that they get in savings. they then kind of, they've set up a nonprofit charitable foundation that they send to schools to help with activities and busing and all sorts of things related to extracurricular activities. What they're asking for, since a lot of tournaments have been canceled because of COVID-19, is to be able to take about 500,000 of that and put it into their operations for the next 2 years. So members, those are the provisions in the tax portion of the bill.
Okay, any discussion, any questions of Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair? I have a question.
Representative Murphy?
Representative Marquardt, with that 500,000 that the High School League is asking for, will they reduce the bills that they've sent to the high schools then?
Mr. Chair, I am not privy to that. So I have not been informed that that would occur.
Because I've been informed that they have sent out bills that are higher than the high schools can pay.
Mr. Chair and Chair Murphy, I have heard that also. I've heard from other member schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're very welcome, Representative Murphy. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on article number R6, and we kind of skipped over that. And I was wondering if somebody could answer both section 1 and section 2 on that for me.
In article 6,
Mr. Chair, this is Bill Marks. I can cover that when I talk about the overall funding.
We were going to cover, we did touch on that in the sense that we decided that when we get close to the end, Mr. Marks would be covering the fiscal stuff.
Great, thank you.
So if you can just wait for your question. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question for Representative Marquardt on the Section 179 tails. I understand that we have the retroactive portion going back to 18 and 19. Is that one time, or what is the cost in ongoing years for that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the 2021 is about $90 million and 22-23 is $118 million. Remember that this is mainly a timing issue. So because it's front-end loaded, so basically what would happen is you'd be able to deduct 100%, let's say something's $100,000. You'd be able to now deduct all of that rather than basically over the next 6 years, which was 20% the first year and basically 20% or one-fifth each of the next five. So they're depreciating it in 1 year versus six. So for each individual person, it winds up to be the same amount in the end than if we didn't change the law. So I don't know if that answers the question, but it's front-end loaded so that cost for those people right now getting benefited, would have washed out in the end.
A follow-up then. So if I bought a combine in 2024, then I could write it off as 100%. So that would just be built into the base then of cost.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm not sure I'm following exactly. I mean, I could, if it was for, let's say for tax year 2020, and you deducted all of the $100,000, it would be the tax break on the $100,000 versus basically being carried over from 20 through 2025 over 6 years. So you get all in one rather than over 6 years. I still don't know if I'm answering your question like you want, but I, for that for that specific taxpayer, there would not be an increased cost to the state versus getting the deduction up front over 6 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think I understand, but I can double check with you later on. I'm just thinking about 2 or 3 years out and what that would do. So,
very good.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Thank you. So the issue of the high school licensing fees came up, and that's something that I think on a bipartisan basis we have heard from our local schools that these proposed fees have just been absolutely outrageous. You had mentioned before that amendments would not be accepted. Is there going to be like a leadership tribunal that members can petition to have them accept the amendments? What's the process by which we could try to get that amendment added in there to reduce those fees or cap those fees?
I'm not sure who all those discussions might be held with. I know the speaker has been involved, the majority leader in the Senate. There have been others at the table, as Representative Murphy pointed out, with the capital investment section. So perhaps the beginning point might be, Representative Murphy's the chief author of the bill. You might check with her on what that process might be. It's at this point in time that, as you heard me mention earlier, there were to be no amendments, but that didn't mean that there couldn't be some future discussions. So maybe Representative Murphy would be a good entry point in terms of how that would be handled from the House perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chairman Murphy, or to any member of the majority party, do we know, would Representative Erdahl or Minority Leader Kent or Minority Leader Dowd, would they have an opportunity to sit in a leadership tribunal, or would that be, do we know who's going to make it up this time? To any member of the DFL?
I don't know what you mean by a tribunal, but we have had Representative Erdahl, Representative Sinjum, Senator Pappas, and myself have been working together, and we will discuss these items that are on a list that people have come to us about before we talk to the senior people in leadership.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, and again to any member of the DFL, I mean, are we allowed to reach out to DFL members? We have our own ideas. Or Representative Murphy, to refresh your recollection, the leadership tribunal was the end of last year where a small number of legislative leaders sat down and members would come in and petition them to have things included or excluded from the bill, and they would do a thumbs up and a thumbs down, and they wrote all the bills for us. So I don't know if that model's being used. I would just like to know who the decision makers are, so I know who to, who I and other members know who to pitch our ideas to.
I don't know of that model. I don't know anything about that. But I know that I'm expecting to talk to Erdahl and Sinjum and Pappas tomorrow. And I don't know if they're anticipating a meeting with me or not. I don't know that, but I'm going to try.
At this point, I think the entry point would be Representative Murphy and perhaps maybe the raising of the question in that forum might be a first step. Representative Garofalo, were you done?
I guess Mr. Chairman, I'm not done, but I don't have any more questions at this time. So I'll wait for final adoption for my closing comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
My hand is down.
Oh, it's still up on my screen, so. Okay, any further questions of Representative Marquardt on the tax articles? Seeing none, we'll go to the next article, Article 9, which is the supplemental bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're very welcome. And we're still not done. So while you're on the committee, you'll be here till the end anyway. At any rate, I've had various versions of the supplemental bill. As I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, I think during the regular session, it was at roughly $150 million. It was brought back a few weeks later at $58 million. And currently, it's less than that. And I'll just quickly run through some of the numbers for members of the committee. The total number is 34.982 million in general fund for 2021 with 8.378 million in tails. 16.029 million is to the Department of Human Services for direct care treatment. Operating adjustments, 7.5 million to the Department of Corrections for overtime and staffing. Then there are multiple provisions for the Department of Public Safety, 3.581 million for civil unrest. That's a one-time appropriation. 1.278 million for the State Patrol Capital Security operating. That's ongoing. 3.096 million to the BCA for sexual assault examination kits. 2.067 million of that would be ongoing. And 1.386 million to the BCA for the crime lab, of which 844,000 per year is ongoing. And then 2.112 million to the DNR for civil unrest expenses. A handful of provisions funded in this section are through the Trunk Highway Fund, 5.072 million for the State Patrol for civil unrest. That's one time. 7.168 million for the State Patrol for patrolling highways. 5.668 million per year is ongoing, and 648,000 for the State Patrol for commercial vehicle functions, and 865,000 to MDOT for civil unrest. Funding for the supplemental finance article is paid for through savings in the various agencies and capturing $25 million in net proceeds as a result of higher than anticipated savings from FMAP. That would be the largest single amount in the bill. So I will stop there, and if there are any questions on this funding, Bill Marks is prepared as we, when I recognized Representative Vogel, he had some questions about the funding, and I said Bill Marks would give us a recap. So, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, there, I would just call your attention to that there is a spreadsheet called the Supplemental Finance Tracking, which summarizes what you just went through. That spreadsheet, it deals with Article 9. The other spreadsheet I wanted to review was the summary spreadsheet, and that's the one that's on your screen right now, and this is looking at the overall items in the bill. The first section there, general fund impact, the capital investment is the totals that Mr. Lee had reviewed earlier for the capital investment portion of the bill, the 52.48 million in 2021 and then 89.418 for fiscal 22-23. The next line, supplemental appropriations, are the items you just reviewed, the net total for the general fund, 31,373 in spending or and that's netting out some revenue in there in 2021 and 8.378 in 2223. And then the tax line that Representative Marquardt reviewed, $90 million in cost in 2021. This has $118.1 million for 2223, and that's an error. I didn't pick up a change in the tax spreadsheet. It's 117.94, but only a slight difference there. And then the next section there called General Fund Spending Offsets. In Article 6, the first item there, bond refinancing, is in Article 6. And that shows $41,666,000 in 2021 and $5.785 million in 2223. This is recognizing the savings that MMB received in the August bond sale from refinancing existing bonds. And so these are general fund savings as compared to the February forecast. And this was an item that wasn't changed in the May 5th update. So these are savings relative to that forecast in debt service because of the bond refinancing. The second item there, the FMAP, or the Federal Medical Assistance Participation Increase, that you, Mr. Chairman, reviewed already. This is in Article 9. And because the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary continued a federal emergency declaration related to coronavirus, Minnesota will receive a higher federal reimbursement rate on medical assistance. It's a 52.6% rate instead of 50% for the October through December period. The net savings on this is $25,056,000 over fiscal 21 and 22. I've grouped it all in fiscal 21 in this particular spreadsheet just to keep it in 1 year. So this is also recognizing savings that, this savings also occurred in the third quarter, and that MMB recognized in their July 31st fund balance update when they issued an end of sessions fund balance. So this is net savings to the general fund because of higher federal reimbursement on medical assistance. Then the third item, the premium security plan account transfer of $100 million. This is the other section that's in Article 6. And this is transferring $100 million of the balance in the premium security plan account. The projected balance on June 30th of 2023, when that plan or that account is done paying costs, as established under current law, is $235 million. So this is taking $100 million and still leaving $135 million of that projected balance there. Then the additional item that's on here, refinance general fund savings, unused local government coronavirus relief fund spending. We have an unknown here. There's language in Article 9 that directs Minnesota management and budget to the extent local governments send back any portion of the $841 million of coronavirus relief fund money that they received. I believe the Department of Revenue requirements require that to come back to the state. If it's not spent by cities and counties, there's a date in November, I believe, and then a December 10th date for counties. To the extent any of that money comes back to the state, the language directs MMB to take that money, reduce existing general fund appropriations that would be eligible for federal coronavirus relief fund spending, and replace that spending. So it, to the extent federal money comes back, this will reduce existing general fund spending and save the general fund some money. So then the subtotal of the offsets here, $166,722,000, in this biennium, $5.785 million in the 22-23 biennium with that unknown number in there. So the net general fund impact showing in the first set of lines there, the net general fund impact of this bill would be a cost of $7.131 million in 2021, $210 million in 22-23, or a three-year total of $217.242 million. Then the last two lines there make that same calculation without the tax bill counted in. And you can see that what the numbers are there. It's a net three-year impact of $9.142 million if the tax bill is not assumed. Finally, under the other funds, this sums the spending, the trunk highway fund spending in the supplemental appropriations portion, $13.773 million in 2021, $12.632 million in 2022-23. And then the transfer from the premium security plan account is the same $100 million that is going from that account to the general fund. That, Mr. Chair, is a summary of it.
Okay, I have remarks. I had used the number 34.98 million fund impact. And as I'm looking at the list there, we're looking at the same number, and you use 31,373. If that's something you know off the top of your head, or let me know if applying.
Mr. Chair, if you the supplemental budget page spreadsheet is back up on the screen right now. If you go down to about the middle of the page, it says revenue changes. The direct care and treatment appropriation also brings in some revenue to the state of $3.609 million. That's how the 34.982 spending becomes a net cost of $31,373 to the state because of the revenue.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who is here to answer questions about the content of the supplemental spending portion of where it came from. I did find, and I have a great deal of respect for Mr. Marks, but I don't know why we are putting a summary together to make it look like after we pay for the bonding costs, suddenly it's not going to cost the state anything. If we capture increases in FMAP and the transfer over from the premium security, those could instead be looked at as they should be, I think, outside of this as something different on their own. The real impact of the bill I guess maybe the argument, Mr. Marks, helped me out here, is that those items are actually accomplished in the bill. And that's what I'm guessing the answer is. I don't know if Mr. Marks has any comment on that.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, there is language in the bill relating to those items. The bond refinancing and the FMAP would occur whether or not that language is in the bill. So there, the language is not essential to making that savings happen.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Then I'd be in favor of a different spreadsheet, Mr. Marks. But thank you for putting all the numbers out there, because I think it's important we see them. With that, Mr. Chair, I would be curious, who do I ask questions about the content of the supplemental appropriations portion, Article 9 of the bill?
Well, I suspect if you answer or you pose your question, maybe there's somebody online that can answer.
Well, the first.
If not, I'd probably have to have somebody get back to you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. I see language here related to civil unrest costs in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I don't know if I've seen that in previous versions of this bill. Can someone ask me if this is new language in the bonding bill?
Maybe Mr. Marks or MNB is. Present. I think Brita is on as well, or she was going to be. Who would best answer that?
This is Brita Raytan with MNB. I might defer to Mr. Marks if it was in a prior version of a bill reviewed by this committee. But the costs for the deployments due to the civil unrest has been something we have been tracking at MNB since midsummer, but I'm not sure if this committee has reviewed a bill with this language in it before.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I believe it was included in House File 14 in the second. The numbers may have been different, but there was an appropriation, I believe, in House File 14 in the second special session in July. House File 14 was considered in the Ways and Means Committee. It was passed out of way or moved out of Ways and Means. It was not taken up on the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, if I could proceed.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you. Can someone tell me what civil unrest costs are? Is this represented by the ineptness of our Democrat mayors and Democrat governor in handling the riots in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Is that what we're looking at paying for here?
Rita Rattan, you said you'd been working on this over the summer.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, these costs are related to the deployment of state law enforcement personnel when support has been requested by local units of government. And so this is the cost of the deployment of both law enforcement at the Department of Public Safety, as well as law enforcement at the Department of Natural Resources, the conservation officers that were deployed.
Thank you, Ms. Rattan. Mr. Chair, Ms. Rattan, we had DNR agents in the middle of Minneapolis.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I can't speak to the details of the deployment and the functions that these law enforcement officers served, but the DNR sworn law enforcement officers have been called up in these situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Ms. Rattan. And Mr. Chair, I struggle with these provisions. I think people in the part of the state that I come from and many other parts of the state continue to struggle with the complete lack of leadership in Minneapolis and coming out of the governor's office related to keeping the peace and keeping law and order in our state. I think my constituents would probably throw me out of office for voting for something like this. I'm curious, Mr. Chair, whether these provisions, which amount to, in my back of the napkin calculations, to be about $11 or $12 million, of which $5 million come from the Trunk Highway Fund, funds used supposedly to fix our roads, I'm curious as to whether these provisions are ones that were actually vetted by any Republicans in the legislature, because I can't imagine any of my colleagues in the House that are Republicans, or Representatives Marquardt, Eklund, Sundin, Sandsteed, and others. I think their constituents would throw them out of the House for voting for provisions like this as well. I'm curious as to whether these have been vetted with those rural Democrats and Republicans in the Minnesota House or the Minnesota Senate.
I don't know if your question is rhetorical or not. I don't have an answer for you.
Maybe the author would know.
Perhaps you can talk to some of them.
Mr. Chair, if Representative Murphy would answer a question.
Representative Murphy, do you yield?
I didn't hear the question.
Representative Murphy, we have about $12 million in appropriations for the city of Minneapolis, and St. Paul is in here. It says Minneapolis-St. Paul area, which is very wide open in its definition for sure, as well as the definition of what it will be used for. It just says civil unrest costs, and there's no definition attached to it. I'm curious as to whether Republicans in the House or rural Democrats in the House or Republicans in the Senate are aware of or were part of the approval of these provisions being placed in this bill.
I do not know the answer to that question.
I think
I can't speak to that.
Representative Skowski, I think you'll have to raise that question perhaps with some of those members. Do you have any other questions?
I'm just shocked, Mr. Chair. We have a mystery section of about $12 million of spending in the bill. Nobody knows how it got there. We've got a bill that shows up the evening before special session starts, a bill that we are told we can't amend in committee. Don't you dare amend it in committee, or the majority in the committee is going to kill the amendment, was the message we had in this meeting. So because this bill is so good that it can't be amended, and then we have at least $12 million in the bill that nobody seems to know how it got there. I'm just utterly shocked. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Skowski, you're misrepresenting my comments. What I said about amendments, I said the bill before us is a negotiated agreement that there was the opportunity to raise some of the questions that might come up during this hearing and in future discussions with people who will be working on the bill. That was what I shared with the committee. And I would hope that you wouldn't misrepresent my comments. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those of us that live in the transportation world do our best to jealously guard the Trunk Highway Fund. And I'm a bit surprised that we are taking Trunk Highway Fund dollars to compensate the State Patrol for the cost of civil unrest on city streets. I don't know if there's someone who can give me some logic that has put us in this position or not, I do find it surprising. We think that trunk highway funds are meant to build roads and bridges across the state of Minnesota. We do kind of reluctantly understand that the State Patrol is an important part of transportation to keep our roads safe, and so there is a bit of an uneasy marriage there between funding highways and funding the State Patrol. But in this case, the State Patrol was used not to keep our highways safe, but to deal with civil unrest on city streets. And I just don't personally understand the logic behind that. And I don't know if anyone in this room, this artificial room, can give me any kind of an explanation for it.
Apparently nobody is stepping forward, Representative Torkelson, with your question. Do you have another one?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair. It's surprising how little information is available about this very important bill.
Representative Torkelson, any other questions?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a question for Mr. Marks. You walk us through that summary spreadsheet with the Article 9 spending, and there's that line that has the unknown money coming from the return of the CRF funds, I always get that backwards. And it says there's language, I don't have it in front of me again now, but there's language that's the coming from the return of the funding. Oh, good, thank you. So the language there is that it's unused local government CRF spending. Now, my question is, I was looking at that. I was looking at the language of the bill, and the language of the bill in Article 9, I think it's Section 8, Sub 2 or something like that. And it appears that we're doing more than this is. I'm fine with what's going on. I just want to understand if this is just a mismatch in how it's written onto the spreadsheet as opposed to the bill. My understanding is that this is for more than just the funding that's unused local government funding. because there's a lot of other CRF funding that might possibly be left over. Maybe it's not a lot, but we spent a lot out of the general fund for items that could possibly qualify for the CARES Act funding. And I'm interested in, if there's any of that left, seeing it roll back and refinance what we spent out of the general fund. So I'm just wondering if what's on this little spreadsheet is accurate, or if it's just shorthand for what's in the bill, which is that there are more categories of funding that would roll over to refinance general fund money.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Marks.
Representative Liebling, there are more categories of coronavirus relief fund spending that could be rolled over to replace general fund spending. This language requires that any money returned by local governments must be used for that purpose. But it doesn't require that the other funding go for that purpose, but other funding certainly could go for that purpose. And so if there's money that's never appropriated out of the coronavirus relief fund, or if there's money that's returned from other appropriations, MMB could use that money to replace the general fund spending that had previously been authorized.
Okay, but so, all right, so, well, that's helpful. So this language is not requiring it, though, except for the funds that were given to local governments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's correct.
Okay, all right. Well, let me just say that I would prefer that also apply to the rest of whatever's left over. I mean, I can only assume that it would be used that way. I don't know. Otherwise, it goes back to the federal government. You know, God forbid, we don't want to lose any money that we can have in our available to us in our general fund. And we did early on in the pandemic, we allocated quite a bit of general fund money, and then we got the money from the Fed. So, I don't know. Again, if we can't do any kinds of amending, but I know that my counterpart in the Senate is also interested in this issue. We'd like to see as much of whatever's left over go back into the funds from whence it came or from whence it could have come. So, I mean, just putting that out there, and I don't know, it's, I guess, some of the same question, I guess, with some of the Republican members, kind of how that could happen. Maybe I'll have to do some talking to some folks and see if we could make what would seem to be a minor amendment. I don't know. It was confusing to me how that was structured. But, you know, I'd like to see us do that with all of it. I'll stop talking there. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Houseman. Representative Houseman?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, somebody keeps muting me. I unmute myself, but then the system mutes me. So I thought you didn't hear anything that I said?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Well, we did earlier, but not recently. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm responding to the earlier comments by Representative Drazkowski and Representative Torkelson, because I think they deserve a response. Anytime you go to the revenue department and ask, where does our revenue come from? It is very clear that Bourbon Corps pays a very large share of state taxes, just the nature of who we are. Today, Governor Walz authorized state disaster assistance for five counties across Minnesota, Kitson, Le Sueur, Morrison, Renville, Washington County, because of the excessive moisture that caused significant damage to roadways, culverts, earthen berms, and drainage systems, and so forth. So Governor Walz was responding to disasters around the state with state assistance. This bill helps local communities all over the state. Road disasters, flood disasters, water disasters. I would venture to guess, I haven't done the search of that, that's hundreds of millions of dollars in this state fix disasters that are a burden to local communities, that are a burden to local communities. And so all state taxpayers help them. But when the disaster is in the urban core, somehow we're shocked that state taxpayers are asked, will they help?
Okay, Representative Torkelson, your hand is up again.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. Just a quick response to Representative Hausman. My objections were not necessarily to the spending, but to the resource that was being used in the form of trunk highway funds. That's a separate conversation. But I do have I'm going to try a more direct question this time for Mr. Marks. As I recall in earlier conversations, in one of our earlier special session times, there was talk of, I believe it was $58 million or so in savings that was mostly come from hiring freezes. That seems to have disappeared from the conversation. I may not have the number right, but can you illuminate my memory a little bit as to what, if that is the case, and if it is the case, what happened to those supposed savings? He's muted, Mr. Chair.
Well, some of those.
Yes, I am. Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, that same House File 14 in the second special session in July had a section that reduced state agency budgets by $58 million. That is not in this bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask a follow-up, where did it go? was it not real, or was it inappropriate, or did it just we're saving it for a rainy day? Or I did have a rainy day last night. That was a good thing, by the way.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, and perhaps Ms. Rattan would care to comment on this, but my understanding is that the hiring freeze is not saving as much money as MMB had initially anticipated. And then also because some of their supplemental budget requests have been scaled back considerably in this proposal, there would not be as much savings there. That is that the proposals for direct care and treatment, or the proposals for the Department of Corrections, have been scaled back from the level they were in House File 14. So the agencies have had to use any savings they've accrued to just maintain programs rather than having those available for budget reductions.
Well, if I might pursue this a little further, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. So what, you know, we've had a change at the top of MMB. Does this change in the interpretation of what savings might be realized through these budget or salary freezes or hiring freezes, is the change in interpretation of that related to the change in leadership at MMB, or is it, did we just, I really would like to know what happened, because, you know, we had $58 million and now we don't. That's a little painful.
Mr. Chair, if I might. This is Britta Raytan with MMB. I do want to highlight that you'll notice that the direct care and treatment and the DOC operating adjustments are significantly lower in this bill than they were previously. So the DCT operating adjustment is a really good example. The $58 million was constructed assuming we would generate significant savings out of the central office at DHS. Their ask for direct care and treatment is now reduced from the original ask, because they are recognizing those savings in their central office and then using their transfer authority to help make DCT whole. That allowed us to bring down that ask for direct care and treatment. Same is true for the Department of Corrections. We were able to bring down that ask because they carried forward funding from 20 into 21. And that funding carried forward because, in part, because of a hiring freeze in the administrative level at the Department of Corrections. I do want to highlight the hiring freeze is still in place. The hiring freeze is generating savings. I would say that the original estimate that we did right at the beginning of this pandemic is proving to be a bit high. The reason I think we're seeing that is because to generate savings from a hiring freeze relies on turnover. That estimate was based on a historic level of turnover, and we are just seeing less turnover as the economy shifts.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, if I might follow up a little further here.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. As I recall, the governor and his people made it sound like this was a very real savings at the time we were talking about it a month or two ago, and now all of a sudden it's become very fluffy. It kind of erodes our trust in what we see coming out of MMB. We're in difficult times. We're going to be looking at cuts sooner or later. We're spending money right now that we don't know apparently if we really have it or not. This is very, very challenging. We need to hit these things head on with the full understanding of what we're doing and what these numbers really are and what they really mean. Can you give me any kind of a number on savings from a hiring freeze? You know, we have a concept, some of us have a concept, we see many businesses that have had to cut staff for a variety of reasons, so many of them imposed by the governor, but yet we're not seeing any reduction, significant reduction in state employees. This is a little bit concerning. Can you give me a number of savings at this point on the hiring freeze or not?
Representative and Mr. Chair, I don't have a number in front of me. I believe Commissioner Showalter pulled together some information on this topic, and so we can provide some follow-up to you.
Thank you. I look forward to that.
Any further questions, Representative Torkelson?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm finished at this point.
Okay. I didn't give you a very good answer earlier when you were asking about the highway funds. I simply was not a part of the negotiation. So when you say where did that idea come from, I can't tell you whether it was House or Senate, but I can tell you that the House and Senate leadership has agreed to the bill. Who put that particular provision on the table, whether it was one side or the other, but there was agreement on that as a source of funding. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make a comment on Representative Hausman's comment regarding the governor's, you know, providing funding for flooding and too much moisture out in different parts of our state to help folks out there mitigate that. And I just want to make a distinction between that and what happened in Minneapolis and St. Paul. One was caused by nature. And the other was caused by men who did not make the right decisions and in leadership, and the destruction that happened down there was caused by people rioting. It wasn't caused by Mother Nature, and I just don't think it's a fair comparison. And so I just wanted to point that out. Thank you for letting me do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions really deal with the premium security or the reinsurance fund piece and the $100 million transfer that is going to be coming from there. I'm not sure to whom this question would be best for, but I'm just curious on if we are confident that we have overfunded the program by $100 million, that this fund won't end up running out short in the relief it provides for private insurance rates, and if we are confident with that, are we also confident that this will not affect the reimbursement that we get from the federal government for this expenditure? And so whoever can help me with that It'd be appreciated.
Anybody stepping forward?
Mr. Chair?
Or Mr. Marks? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I can try at it anyway. The information that we have, the fund balance statement projects out through June 30th of 2023. By that time, the all of the obligations entered into under the current law should be paid for. And this projects a balance of, or the fund balance projects a balance of $235 million at that point in time. So taking $100 million out should still result in $135 million balance at that point in time. It should not affect the program at all or any of the obligations under that program.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Marks and Mr. Chair. And that would follow the same then for the reimbursement or the match from the federal government.
Mr. Chair, I have no reason to believe that would be affected.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks.
Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, my apologies. The change in the Zoom protocol threw me there for a moment. I have appreciated the committee's discussion this evening on some of the spending in this bill. And I'd just like to bring us back for a minute. So kind of the Minnesota tradition that I was raised in, which is that you help out your neighbor. And, you know, that sometimes means a push out of a snowbank on a snowy winter day. It sometimes means mowing the lawn of your next door neighbor when there's maybe been a death in the family and, you know, they need just a little favor, or showing up to help out, drop off some hot dish, I guess, or a pot of soup when there's a new baby on the block. The tradition in Minnesota is we help each other out. And I'm struck tonight by the choices of the minority in what expenses to the state they ask about and what expenses to the state they don't. On the bonding bill, the only question asked about why these projects was to the projects that focused on equity. Things like the American Indian Center, which is badly in need of some repairs and has a remarkable plan for remodeling to make sure that that stays as a linchpin in the Native American Cultural Corridor in Minneapolis on Franklin Avenue, or the Native American Community Clinic. I had the privilege of visiting there. It's on Franklin as well. And it does a remarkable job of delivering health care to the Native American community in a way that affirms and uses their cultural traditions. You walk into the clinic and you can smudge. My clinic, we don't do that, but, you know, that's okay too. And then the question about the civil unrest in my city, in my neighborhood, in my community. And if you think about the total bill, Representative Marquardt has a very expensive provision on 179 expensing. And then we've got this small provision to cover some public safety costs related to the civil unrest. And remember, there's not a dime in this bill to help rebuild the city of Minneapolis and to help the businesses who are heavily damaged to get back on their feet. So we've got two sets of business people, Mr. Chair. One who will benefit from the Section 179 expensing, who are primarily farmers, it's a business, primarily white, and they are going to get a benefit in this bill. And you've got another set of business people who had nothing to do with the civil unrest and will receive no benefit from this bill, primarily black and brown business people in the area of the state that generates the revenue that goes to pay the majority of the state's expenses. And Mr. Chair, I just asked the committee to reflect back on the Minnesota tradition, which is that we help each other out. As Representative Hausman stated, the governor signed emergency assistance for 5 counties today. We're helping out our neighbors. And I'll bet you, because I know my colleagues, there's not a Minneapolis or St. Paul legislator who objects to that spending. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Hertas.
Good evening, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, to Representative Dabney, I served with you on Education Finance Committee. I came into your neighborhood and we toured some of the facilities that are in your backyard. And after the riots, my first thought of what was going on was with you, believe it or not, and that this was in your backyard. So my condolences to the destruction that happened in your neighborhood. I think there has been a tradition of helping our neighbors, and I don't think that's really a big question. I think rhetorically, there's certainly, it's always easy to be armchair quarterback and look at what could have been done differently. That may be the case. With your comments about the Section 179, we don't categorize businesses by race. Anybody who is in business is entitled to those benefits. And certainly for those businesses in your neighborhood that may have expensible items that they can fully expense, not only being struck by COVID, but by rebuilding their businesses due to the destruction, is a good thing. And I hope you appreciate that all of your businesses and your minority-owned businesses are entitled to that. With regard to the hiring freeze, maybe Ms. Raitan might be able to answer my question. I've been under the assumption as well that we are in a hiring freeze, but maybe that has changed, because for the last 3 weeks on social media, while I'm perusing the net, I'm having advertisements from the Minnesota state of Minnesota is advertising that they're hiring. So this seems to be in direct conflict with what most of us believe to be a hiring freeze. And yet it seems or appears that the state of Minnesota is actively engaged in hiring or recruiting new people. And then just a follow-up on the transfer of money. We clearly understood that when we authorized the general fund expenditure for emergency and COVID, that when the CARES Act money, and we knew that the CARES Act money maybe was coming, it had to be officially done. And I think we actually didn't even appropriate that money. We waited until that was actually signed into law by the Fed. And then we went ahead and used our federal or used our general fund with the full intention that COVID money would be replacing it. Do we have a commitment? Does MMB have a commitment or no? Right now with the governor's powers, he is able to appropriate and do everything without legislative oversight. Do we have a commitment from the governor that this money is going to be repaid, which would help us, balance the budget?
Director Raitan, do you have an answer to that question?
Representative and Mr. Chair, to the first question about the hiring freeze, I want to be clear. There is still a hiring freeze in place. There are some exceptions to the hiring freeze for employees in what we call priority 1 and 2 services that are dealing in kind of frontline safety-related positions or in positions that are directly related to the COVID response. I can't speak in detail about that process, but our enterprise human resources folks at MMB are involved in that, those discussions when there is vacancies in those positions that are directly related to direct service and for COVID response. In terms of the federal funding, there is a commitment certainly to maximizing the federal funds. So I want to be clear that there's a shared commitment to making sure we're not sending federal funds back to the federal government at the end of this period with the Coronavirus Relief Fund. I do think, yes, there is the ability for the governor to seek authorization through the LAC in order to redirect those funds to be used to replace the general fund dollars. Whether I can't speak to how much will be available at the end of this period, though.
Representative Hertas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that information, Mr. Khan, and that clears up a little bit about the strategic positions in public safety that maybe need to still be hiring. So thank you for that. I guess all of us, as we're dealing with the business before us and the bonding bill, might feel a little more comfortable knowing that there is a firm commitment to replenish that money which we authorized last spring as our first emergency response to COVID-19 from the general fund. And maybe other members might have a little more clarity on that, but I thought it was around $390 million or so. Is that correct, or was it a little bit higher number? Maybe Mr. Marks knows what that is.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, I don't recall the exact number. We were working with it was 300 and some million, and I'd have to look up the number that we were looking at.
The number kind of bounced back and forth a little bit, but it was in that neighborhood of a number that comes to my mind at one point was 330. But it kind of bounced around as we were working on it.
Mr. Chair, I just, would like to go back to when we were talking about this appropriation in Ways and Means last spring. I think it's, really incumbent that, what information we were given, and again, I remember the specificity about the CARES Act, the COVID Act, was coming through Congress. We had approved the appropriation, but I understood there was an explanation to it that we weren't going to disperse it until the actual bill was signed. And so it was just kind of a cash flow thing. And I think a lot of us were, not only were we supportive of doing what was necessary back in March or April with regard to a COVID response, it was broad bipartisan support for that. But I think a lot of the comfort in our decision-making was knowing that the CARES Act money that was coming, once it was received, would be able to go back to the general fund. But for some reason, since we're kind of out of the loop on appropriating money, there's been a real restraint in replenishing that money. So I'm just frustrated by that. I think the amount of money is what we're talking about, in terms of the debt service on the bonding bill and the Section 179, and it would be good to see that money back into the general fund. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just going to comment on the hiring freeze. I, as everybody knows, been here for a number of years, and I don't recall that we ever had, and I might be wrong on this, what I would call a hard freeze. There are always some exceptions based on unique needs within a state agency where they needed a particular skill, or that would just make good common sense that a position be filled. So maybe others remember better than I, but I don't recall ever really having what I would call the hard freeze. But that's my comment on that. Representative Hertos, were you done? I think so. Representative Garofalo, is this the wrap-up?
Mr. Chairman, that would be my intent, if you want to maybe just do one double check to make sure there's no one else, but yes.
You're the only hand that's up, but why don't we have the vice chair renew her motion, and then I'll give you an opportunity to wrap up before we vote.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion, Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to start off on a more serious note than normal. For those of you that are here to listen to me as the entertainment wing of the House Republican Caucus, rest assured I'll finish up with the good stuff. But I do want to talk on a serious note about an item that people have brought up here, and that is the issue of what is happening in Minneapolis and St. Paul, primarily in Minneapolis. It's important for all of us to remember that the models for infrastructure financing, for service delivery, and private sector business models were all premised on the basis that hundreds of thousands of people would drive in, commute into Minneapolis and St. Paul. They would work, consume services, and they'd go home. And that business model is gone. That is a pre-COVID-19 model. The world has permanently changed. This is incredibly disruptive to not only government service delivery operations, but also to those private sector businesses whose models are premised on that. If we were all rowing the boat in the same direction, it would be incredibly difficult to work on these issues. But it is crucial that members understand how that challenge that is facing us, that literally the systems we put in place are no longer relevant in a post-COVID-19 world. We have to make adjustments. And that's just one silo of the challenges we are facing. A second silo in Minneapolis is the issue of a lack of tourism or convention traffic, trade association meetings. Like it or not, we unfairly have a branding problem. And no one is going to come to Minneapolis to be identified for their trade association or annual meeting until we correct those branding issues. This means that hotels, the hospitality industry, incredibly disruptive. And then third and finally are the public safety issues we're seeing in Minneapolis primarily. And we're seeing this as being disruptive to not only the cultural amenities of pro sporting events, but also the Hennepin Theater District, the nightlife, where these tax revenues are how many of the operations are funded in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And again, all three of these things are seismic changes that we all need to address. And I would hope as we go forward for those that will be here next year working on things, that you keep that in mind, the level of disruption that is taking place, and that the things that you may or may not have supported in the past really don't make sense in the post-COVID world. We had a debate on the House floor today where members who were 6 feet apart were, admonished to wear a mask when they were talking. It's just not feasible to expect that people are going to crowd into a crowded bus or a crowded train in a post-COVID-19 world. That's just not going to happen. And so we need to adjust those business models. So that's the serious side of things. So now we'll have a little bit more informative stuff. So Mr. Marks, I have a quick question for you, if you are available.
I am available.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks. So we have a multi-billion-dollar deficit, and I believe the proposal before us both increases spending and cuts taxes. Am I right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, yes.
Okay. And so, Mr. Marks and members of the committee, a odd way of balancing the budget is to cut taxes and increase spending. If you've seen this before, you should. This is how Washington, D.C. does things. Certainly, this is accepted practice for Washington, and I guess when you have a governor who learned a lot of bad habits in his 14 years in Washington, D.C., it's reasonable to assume that he's going to try to export those bad habits to the state of Minnesota. But balancing the budget, we have a constitutional requirement. We can't print money and ignore it like the folks in Washington. And what we have before us, again, is a proposal to cut taxes and increase spending despite having a deficit. To my Democrat colleague, my DFL colleagues, I mean, hoo-wee, you guys like to spend money. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff from you guys, but you really enjoy spending money. And as I take a look at this, I can certainly itemize some of the priorities that are here and be critical of those. I think I'm going to save that stuff for the House floor. But as I look at this, I can't help but wonder, what the long-term consequences of these decisions are going to be, these priorities and what items people are focusing on. So that's good stuff. But I have to tell you, I have to give a shout out to my longtime friend, the Speaker of the House, Speaker Hortman. I had the honor of being elected with her, and she is smart, and she is very, very shrewd. And by releasing this bill when she did on Sunday night, number one, it's a good government transparency thing so everyone can see what's in there. But what we're seeing already on social media is the sort of conservative think tanks, conservative groups are finding the provisions in here that are objectionable, and they're starting to freak out, and they're starting to go nuts on social media. And they're not going to take out their anger on DFLers. That's not who they're going to yell at. They're going to yell at Republicans. They're going to yell at Republicans who are voting for the bill. And that was a very smart move by the Speaker to do that, very shrewd. And I know that the messaging will be that, well, we have to talk about the good things that are in this bill, and so people in the community can reach out to them. But, boy, the next couple of days, we're just going to have this social media ecosphere just, you know, blasting my team and opposing us with the stuff that's in this bill. And that was just a smart tactical maneuver on her part. So I'm disappointed by that. Obviously, I'll be voting no on this bill. I don't like to vote for spending that's not paid for. I enjoy tax cuts, but they got to be paid for. You can't just be cutting taxes without paying for things. And it's unfortunate that we're heading down a pathway here where we're likely to see Governor Walz's strategy for balancing the budget in the future involving asking the federal government for more bailouts, draining the budget reserves down to zero, and then, of course, just relying on RATs, recognized accounting tricks, to shift things. And it's pretty clear he thinks that he can avoid any structural changes until beyond his attempt at reelection in 2022. That's disappointing for the state. Works for Washington, doesn't work for Minnesota. I'll be voting no today, and would encourage my colleagues to do the same. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of House File 1 signify by saying aye.
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 Mr. Chair, this is Nancy. I think you need to take a roll call.
Yeah, I think so.
You're voting on the bill. Hello?
Lyndon.
He's muted.
Lyndon.
The motto of 2020 is your mute button is on.
There it goes.
Still muted, Lyndon.
Representative Walson, maybe you want to take over.
Sure. I think that he was moving to call the roll. Lyndon, Chair Carlson, we couldn't hear you there, but I think you're moving to call the roll.
Call the roll. I'm unmuted.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo? Representative
no.
Garofalo?
No.
No. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids, excused. Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Drazkowski, no. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton?
No.
Hamilton, no. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertas?
No.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha?
No.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Long, aye. Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Poppy?
Poppy, aye.
Poppy, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, no.
Torkelson, no. Representative Vogel?
No.
Vogel, no. Representative Wagenius?
Wagenius, aye.
Wagenius, aye. 18 ayes, 10 nays.
Okay, motion prevails. I temporarily forgot when we're dealing online like this, all passage of bills has to be a roll call vote. So thank you for the reminder, Ms. Conley. We'll now take House File 42. That's the supplemental finance bill. That's exactly the same as the section we just completed discussing. So I'd like to turn the chair over to Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're going to go to House File 42. Would you like to move your bill, Chair Carlson?
Yes, I move that House File 42 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And I can walk through the bill again if people would like, but it's identical to the section that we just adopted in House File 1. As I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we would be having this bill reported out as a separate vehicle. So, Madam Chair, that's the bill.
Great. So why don't we just take any questions? We have Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and for the reasons I stated earlier, I recommend a no vote on this and encourage members to vote no.
Any further discussion?
I would encourage a yes vote.
Right. Chair Carlson, you care to renew your motion?
Yes, I would like to renew my motion that House File 42 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Great. And with that, we'll have Ms. Sparkman call the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson?
Yeah.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids, excused. Representative Dabney?
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Drazkowski, no. Representative Eklund?
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton?
No.
Hamilton, no. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertaus?
Hertaus, no.
Hertaus, no. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Poppy?
Poppy, aye.
Poppy, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, no.
Torkelson, no. Representative Vogel?
No.
Vogel, no. Representative Wagenius?
Wagenius, aye.
Wagenius, aye. 18 ayes, 10 nays.
Okay, on the vote, the motion prevails and House File 42 is on the way to the floor. That I'll hand it back to Chair Carlson.
Okay, thank you. And we'll now take the Veterans Restorative Justice bill up, and we'll be taking up Senate File 2, which is identical to House File 9. It passed the Senate today and was referred to Ways and Means. So, Representative Eklund, would you care to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 2 be recommended and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Would you care to explain the bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if members remember this bill, we've been to Ways and Means at least one other time with it, I believe in 2019. But the bill before you, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act, provides a framework for Minnesota courts on sentencing a justice-involved veteran, which will ensure treatment for service-related disorders that lead to a criminal offense while allowing the veteran the opportunity to fully reintegrate with the community without a record of conviction. It is not a free ride, as a veteran defendant will be required to submit to whatever rehabilitative efforts the court deems necessary to protect public safety. The language is developed through an 18-month collaboration of key Minnesota veterans criminal justice stakeholders. It adapts and improves on the best practices for Minnesota's and other states' veterans courts and veterans sentencing guide statutes, including California Penal Code 1170.9, Texas Government Code Chapter 124, and the existing drug sentencing options of Minnesota Statute 152.18. And with that, Mr. Chair, I can try to answer any questions.
Okay, any discussion? We've got Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Eklund. I believe, have you had an opportunity to speak with Representative O'Neill about the concerns she laid out?
Representative Eklund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, we are on a Zoom call this afternoon. We talked about the details, and what I'm attempting to do is set up another Zoom call with Representative O'Neill, Representative Johnson, and others to have the folks that we've worked on developing this bill address their concerns.
And Mr.
Chair, that is tentatively scheduled for. Excuse me, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's tentatively scheduled for 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, thank you. As you know, Representative O'Neill is respected on both sides of the aisle for her work in the protection of victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. She brought up with me concerns, very specific concerns that are, to say concerning would be an understatement. I know that you're a legislator who works at both sides of the aisle, so I would just encourage you to continue that dialogue and to get Representative O'Neill's sign off on those matters or else. So, thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Eklund, I appreciate your reply there to Representative Garofalo's question. Can you give us a status report on the DE amendment? I know that one's being worked on. And so could you give us a status report?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott. Yes, and after talking with several on a DE amendment, we do not feel that it is probably appropriate at this time to throw something new out there that does not have a chance to go in front of the committee process. So I'm hoping that tomorrow at 4 o'clock in that meeting that we can work off the details of the issues and then see where this process goes from there.
So,
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm a little bit confused that you're going to have a meeting to try to work things out, but you don't want to do a DE amendment. So how would we resolve the outstanding issues with this bill? Representative Eklund.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott. Well, that's what I'm hoping the details can be worked out in tomorrow's meeting if we can adequately address Representative O'Neill's concerns with how the bill was developed.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you would come up with amendments at that point in that meeting, and then they would just be floor amendments? Is that what you're saying, Representative Eklund?
Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, if that is appropriate to do, and we can adjust or address all parties concerned, that could be a possibility.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to mention what some of these concerns are. One of the concerns is that an offender who commits domestic assault by strangulation, they could go to treatment, but they would be able to stay in their own home during that time, and they wouldn't even have to complete the treatment, according to what the language is in this bill. And so there are issues with it. There are also costs that would be passed down to the counties. And so these are pretty significant concerns. And I guess I would just like to get Representative Eklund's take on that concern about the bill that, it doesn't require that they that the offender complete treatment. They could basically drag out the sentencing and by not completing the treatment. And then this whole scenario where the certain level of offense, where he could basically strangle his wife, for instance, within an inch of her life, and then still get to be stay at home in that same home and just say, yeah, I'm going to go to treatment. So I'd really like to hear Representative Eklund's response to that concern.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Scott. And I'm very concerned about, and I'm glad that Representative O'Neill brought this up. And that's one of the questions that I want to have answered as well tomorrow. I will point out that this group that I've been working with has worked closely with Violence Free Minnesota's executive Liz Richards. And she has said that the Veterans Restorative Justice Act is consistent with their goal of broader discussion of criminal justice reform. They are generally supportive of the bill and would like to continue working with us in the future. So, we've had several groups sign off on this, and that's part of why I want to have further discussion tomorrow with Representative O'Neill and others on seeing if we can fix the questions that they're having.
Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair, I'm tempted just to move to table this until those discussions have been had. Otherwise, we're all taking a vote that could be a really bad vote. So I guess, Mr. Chair, I guess I would move that we table this bill until it gets resolved with stakeholders and with Representative O'Neill.
Okay, there's a motion to table.
And I'd like a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Laura, are you ready to take the roll?
Just about one moment. Representative Carlson?
No.
Carlson, no. Representative Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, no. Representative Davids? Excused. Representative Dabney?
No.
Dabney, no. Representative Druskowski?
Aye.
Druskowski, aye. Representative Eklund?
Eklund, no.
Eklund, no. Representative Hamilton?
Hamilton, aye.
Hamilton, aye. Representative Hansen?
Pass.
Pass. Representative Hausman?
No.
Hausman, no. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, no.
Hornstein, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, no.
Liebling, no. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, no.
Lilly, no. Representative Long?
Long, no.
Long, no. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, no.
Mariani, no. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, no.
Marquardt, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Noor?
Noor, no.
Noor, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Poppy?
Poppy, no.
Poppy, no. Representative Schumacher? Representative Schumacher? Representative Scott?
Yes.
Scott, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Vogel, aye. Representative Wagenius?
Wagenius, no.
Wagenius, no. Representative Schumacher? Nine ayes, 17 nays.
Representative Hansen was a no.
Representative Hansen, no. Nine ayes, 18 nays.
Okay, motion fails. Any further discussion? Representative Albrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, you referenced that the meeting that you have scheduled with the other interested parties from both sides will be at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. But considerate of that, and I can be corrected on this, but your motion was to send this to the general register. Is it your intention that this will be taken up tomorrow or on Wednesday? I'm just trying to understand the timing of when you intend to meet with all the interested parties, and it seems to me like it's after the committee process has ended.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, we're trying to do the best for the schedules that people have. The folks that for instance, tomorrow we have Washington County Attorney Peter Orpett and State Public Defender from the State Public Defender's Office, William Ward, are going to be on the call to answer questions that Representative O'Neill and others have as far as this their concerns about the bill. And they were only available from 3 till 5, and I will be in committee till after 3 tomorrow. So that's why I picked 4 o'clock. That's the only reason I had that time.
Mr. Chair, I just don't understand why you would and your party committed to this.
You're not still in session, are you?
That you would refuse to hand this over.
Ways and means.
I didn't hear your question, Representative Albright.
I was listening to Representative Pawlowski give explanation that he was still in committee. Representative Eklund, wouldn't it still be prudent to hold this over in Ways and Means until you complete and satisfy the concerns of those that have raised, I think, very, very substantial concerns with regard to this bill, rather than take a tact of putting it on the general register and take it up and then quite literally throw an amendment on that no one has had an opportunity in any committee to vet and properly look through?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I personally, at this point in time, do not intend to offer any amendments until I find out what the results of the meeting that we have tomorrow. And I would assume, as far as your other question, it would probably be taken up on the possibly on the floor on Wednesday.
Representative Eklund, Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, I can assure you that our concerns are very real, and I would hope that you would take those under serious consideration. The committee process is where we do this work, not on the floor. Regardless of the consideration of putting a DE1 or DE amendment together amongst a small group of people, I think that you are presenting yourself with a very challenging set of circumstances that I think imperil your bill. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Scott, your hand is still up. Are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just raised it again. And I just wanted to add that, you know, this bill came to judiciary, I believe, before the COVID shutdown. And we expressed concerns there. And Representative Eklund wouldn't amend the bill there either. And look, we all have seen the success of these veterans courts, and we want to help veterans, but we don't want to do it at the peril of somebody else. And so I would just, this is very concerning to me. And just because it passed through the Senate cleanly doesn't mean that we should pass a bad bill off the floor. So let's take the time and do this right. And we will be back, I'm assuming, in November for another special session. And we can take up the bill at that time after it's been amended so that there's really, truly peace in the valley. And I don't remember ever having a veterans bill pass off the House floor in my time in the legislature that didn't have probably unanimous support. So, Representative Eklund, I would just encourage you to reach for that goal because we do want to help veterans, but none of us here want to do it at the peril of somebody else. So thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Eklund, care to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion, and I would also add, Mr. Chair, if I could, that I think I have a pretty good reputation across the aisle. So if we need work on this, on the discussion tomorrow, I'm certainly looking at it. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion that it be referred to the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. This requires a roll call. Ms. Clark.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright.
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids, excused. Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski, no. Representative Eklund.
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton.
Oh.
Hamilton, no. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman.
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling.
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Long?
Long, aye.
Long, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Poppy?
Poppy, aye.
Poppy, aye. Representative Schumacher? Representative Schumacher? Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, no.
Torkelson, no. Representative Vogel?
No.
Vogel, no. Representative Wagenius?
Wagenius, aye.
Wagenius, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the general register. With that, our business is complete. It looks like everybody's going to have a late supper. It's been a long day, but thank you, and meeting adjourned.